All right, welcome to episode 23 of That's Your Garbage Podcast. This week, our party is dwindled a bit. Mike is not present. G is with us via Skype from an undisclosed location.
He's in Ottawa.
That's right.
It's not an issue.
And the rest of us are sitting around the microphone. So, let's go around the table, so to speak. What have you been up to?
What I've been up to? I've been making a little progress in figuring out some more stuff for the Boxy Box. So I'm getting ready to start writing articles for the site on guides for a few different things. And beyond that, I've watched a little anime. I actually went back and watched one of the series that's set in the Universal Century Gundam storyline called 0083 Stardust Memory, which was actually much better than I remember it being. It was actually really awesome. I'll write a review of it for the site at some point. And other than that, I've been catching up on Game of Thrones and actually got my 2 cents in on the fifth episode review this week. And it was only a day and a half late, so, you know, that's not bad.
It's pretty good.
What about you guys?
HBO, man. The joke.
What's that?
You gotta get HBO.
No one's buying HBO. I'm not paying the $90 for HBO for fucking premium cable just for the privilege to pay another $20 for HBO. Not happening. All right.
You need your money, bro.
All right, I guess I'll talk about what I've been doing this week. Aside from working my ass off, doing a whole shit ton of paperwork, I have been watching American Dad on Netflix for some reason, because they have the whole series on Netflix, and I was like, I think I might like this show. I kind of don't.
That's a fucked up show, and Patrick Stewart's in it.
Yeah, he is.
Patrick Stewart's in
it?
What the fuck?
And his character looks exactly like Patrick Stewart.
Basically. He's he's the director of the CIA in American Dad. The one thing I can say about American Dad is it's a lot better than Family Guy, though I realize that's not saying much.
Zing.
That's really saying nothing.
Wait, better than Family Guy?
Do you mean New Family Guy?
Yeah, I mean New Family Guy.
All right.
Like, the show actually, American Dad, it starts off really shitty, and then it gets better, but it doesn't really get all that good. It's just kind of like... It actually reminds me a lot of... American Dad reminds me a lot of current Simpsons, where it is not bad, but it is not exceptional. It is just there. You know what I mean?
Current Simpsons is pretty crap.
Mediocrity is not an acceptable standard.
That's yeah. Right. But thank then you. Again, this is Fox, so mediocrity is all they have.
That's the best they got.
They got shitty news and they got bad American.
That's not news. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but actually... something I caught, if you guys watch Bill Maher at all, on HBO, of all networks.
I love Bill Maher.
Seth MacFarlane was a special guest on that show, and one of the questions was, how can you do whatever the fuck you want when your show is on such a fucked up network like Fox? Especially poking fun at Fox News and stuff. And Seth basically said that Fox News is a completely... separate entity from the rest of Fox programming. So you can have shows like Family Guy that make fun of Fox News, and it's not the same.
No, you're right. Fox, the television network, is just about like pandering to the lowest common denominator for ratings and advertising revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Fox News is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party.
It's true.
They're completely different entities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Under,
kind of under the same roof, if you want to call the name a roof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I don't even think they have the same, they don't even share the same headquarters, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think so. And actually, oddly enough, American Dad is like a prime example of them like hating on each other, because American Dad is sort of like this, it's basically like a shittier version of this, of the Colbert Report, where it's basically just hardcore Republicans acting like idiots or dumbasses.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's definitely...
They do that all the time.
Yeah.
That's basically entirely what the show's about.
It just satirizes everything.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, so hardcore American that it's ridiculous.
Mm.
Anyway, let's kick off with jokes here.
Oh, you don't want to ask what he's doing?
Nobody cares what G's doing.
I want to know what he's doing, because he said he might be doing something. What are you doing? What are you doing?
I might be doing something.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
That's later, guy.
It's true. He's got a hotel.
There's some plumbing to be done.
This roving doesn't happen until 10:30. Minimum.
No, none of our listeners know what time it is. It could be a quarter after.
It is 9 o'clock, so we have about an hour before he disrobes and shocks us all, so...
turning the webcam on later.
No.
Well, we you better fucking have that set to block video. God damn.
Podcast is going visual.
That's what this notepad file is for. I just cover it up.
All right. Okay. Lame joke. I'm kind of... G, what are you doing, man?
Guys, I'm in Ottawa. I'm doing anything.
Okay. Lame joke.
Our nation's capital. We're doing
this
nothing.
Like, this is pretty it's fucking lame that it hurts my feelings. So here we go.
Okay. Why?
You feel bad about this.
Why can't a chicken coop have more than two doors?
Oh, sweet shit.
Why?
Because if it had four doors, it would be a chicken sedan.
Face that bombs. That was a bad
face
joke.
Face bombs.
That was a bad joke, and you should feel bad for reciting it.
I don't know. I kind of like it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but you have no taste.
All right, you need to cross over into Quebec right now, because we don't want you in the English-speaking part of our nation anymore for liking that joke. Get out.
Dude, I'm already a separatist. Let them go.
He wants to build a nation of me.
Just Lorenzo?
No, just G.
Oh, just him. Oh, God.
Right.
We would be nuked instantaneously.
Don't give him the launch codes. It's a bad idea, kids.
No, not even him. Just once other countries realize, they will begin, like, a nuclear holocaust just on Canada. They'll be like, oh god, we can't let this surface.
I'm not affiliated with this in any way whatsoever.
A
disclaimer.
Nation of G? Alright.
Alright, okay.
Have, like, posters of me saying, he's a real boy, and everybody skits here.
I don't know what Skype just did, but
yeah,
it wasn't pretty.
Okay, good joke. Jesus and the devil were arguing over which one of them was the better computer programmer.
Getting religious.
I am, Jesus said. No, I am, the devil countered. I am, me, no me. Enough, God bellowed, and the whole universe disappeared into darkness. When the lights came back on, two computers were sitting in front of them. God said, now, whoever makes the best computer program in 20 minutes wins. Jesus and the devil both sat down, typing and clicking furiously. This went on for about 15 minutes, but then there was a power failure, and everything went dark. When everything came back up again, the computer screens were both blank. The devil tried in vain to get back everything he had lost. He came up empty-handed. Jesus pressed one key, and it all came back. The devil looked at him in astonishment. No way, how did you do that? Jesus turned to him and smiled and said, everybody knows Jesus saves.
That was not a good joke. That was just
all right,
another lame
double
joke.
Double lamer then.
Wow, should work out there.
I saw that punchline coming.
I figured
about 2.5 sentences into this.
I don't
waste
write this shit,
of
man.
My life.
I don't write this shit. I waste my life finding it.
I thought the devil used Google Docs. That's
work harder. Find better jokes.
Nah.
This is why we need you to email us at podcast@thatsyourgarbage.com with hopefully good jokes. You can send us lame jokes, too. I don't give a fuck. I'll read them. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, guys. Shit goes down when you don't email us.
Yeah, shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's not good.
Okay, let's go into...
Lame jokes departed.
Yeah. I have another one, but I'm saving it for Mike next week. Anyway.
Oh,
Dust Warfare. What's up?
Yeah, so... I got my hands on a copy of the rulebook for Dust Warfare. That's the new expansion by Fantasy Flight Games to their series of games that are set in the fictional Dust universe. So there was a board game, war game hybrid we've mentioned previously called Dust Tactics, which is really good. And so they came out with a full war game expansion of it. And I got a chance to get my hands on a copy of the rulebook, and I took a good long read through. I actually read the whole thing cover to cover, and I actually was really intrigued by a lot of the ideas that they had. One of the things that's really unique about, unique compared to most other non-Games Workshop war games these days, is that they actually have the players alternating using all of their units in their unit phase, rather than alternating like by unit back and forth between the players. In this game, in the unit phase, I use all my units, you use all your units, which is sort of like the way it is in the Games Workshop games. But in order to break up the monotony of that, they've got all kinds of different ways that you can use your units outside of, like, normal unit activation. You can give them orders in the command phase where they can do things outside of the normal sequence. Or you can also react to any actions taken by enemy units within 12 inches of one of your units. So it actually gives back a lot of kind of interesting, what I think are potentially interesting dynamic options. Overall, I think the game looks really interesting, and G and I are looking forward to giving it a playtest next week for War Game Wednesday. I haven't actually had a chance to talk to G since he's had the rule book in his hands for an extended period. So what do you think of them?
I like the rules. I don't really have a problem with anything specifically to do with Dust Warfare. My issue is more with the SSU and how they don't have walkers, they have helicopters, which kind of fucks everybody who doesn't have helicopters up a little bit.
So what you're saying is that the new Sino-Soviet Union faction are really good.
Well, it's not that they're going to be really good. It's more that just, like, if you have an ally army right now and you don't have a lot of the light walkers that can shoot down airplanes, you're pretty much screwed. Because, like, even with, like, the Axis, right, they have the Luther, and that's the one with the anti-aircraft gun, which just happens to be really good at killing dudes, too. But it's made for shooting down planes. The Allies don't have anything in the medium class that's good at shooting down planes.
I see.
So you're basically screwed. Like, unless you start taking a whole bunch of light walkers that are good at killing planes.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I haven't had a chance to take a look at those rules. I'll put something about them up on the site once I've had a chance to look at them, the rules for the Sino-Soviet Union.
But if you bought the SSU right now, and we played a game tomorrow, even just Dust Tactics, you'd table the shit out. I'd have nothing to do against you.
Yeah, that's potentially somewhat of a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, the dice can only compensate so far.
But none of my weapons in the Allied Army have any stats that can hit planes.
So I just fly around being like, lol, you're dead?
We don't have it. Our walkers can't. The Pounder can't do anything. The Hot Dog definitely can't do anything. Steel Rain can't do anything. So if I have a light walker, and this is the only one I think that actually is good at killing planes, I'm cockfucked.
Yeah, that sounds pretty bad for you.
Well, it's a pretty big balance issue, right? Like, it's unbalancing.
I like that little addendum there for you.
Well, you know,
for me, it's great.
It is a truism in any war game where there's a faction that are like the Russians. I have to play the Russians. So.
Yeah, he's going
to
play SSU for sure.
Has to happen.
All right.
I'm not potentially butthurt by this because I really don't like. It's not that big of an issue.
I don't know. When you were texting me about it, you seemed pretty damn butthurt about it.
Well, no, it's just unbalancing. It's not nearly as bad as Berserk being a shared ability, so I really don't care.
Yeah, that's pretty grotesque.
Oh, the guys can move and just rapid fire and just cause all kinds of shit. I don't care. Like, it's not as bad as some of the other shit that's there. It's just pretty dumb. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
So fine, though. So I might just play that, but then not have to worry.
This sort of sounds to me like an issue of either playtesting, or maybe they just haven't introduced a counter to it yet that they're
right.
Working on.
No, that's you got to build.
They haven't introduced
list.
A counter yet. The Allies and the Axis don't have air units yet. They are getting them. They'll probably be more plane than helicopter, but they're not released yet. So right now you're kind
of
screwed.
So this is one of those issues of like it's an early game, or the game hasn't Dust Warfare hasn't been out for that long, so they're still basically completing the game.
Yeah, and the SSU, like the Sino-Soviet Union, they just released it more for Dust Warfare than for Dust Tactics. They're trying to shoehorn it into both games because everything's designed to be compatible in both games. But right now, it's just the SSU in Dust Warfare are not that bad. The SSU in Dust Tactics are fucked because everybody else can't fight them. Once they figure out planes for the Allies and Axis, that issue probably won't exist anymore. But like right now, it's like it's not good.
Hmm. That just seems odd to me that they didn't really. Like, was the helicopters like a recent thing, or was this?
Yeah, it just came out. The SSU book just came out. The expansion for it.
Hmm.
Yeah, they were just designed right now.
Actually, I have a somewhat wargaming related tangent here. You posted an article about this. This other new war game that got shown at this convention in the UK called Drop Zone Commander. That game looks fucking amazing.
It really does. It has a lot of potential, I think.
Yeah, it was like two guys. One basically focused mostly on writing the rules. The other guy did mostly the sculpts that are done in this new resin that has an unbelievable amount of detail. It's like apparently resin models are not necessarily crap. Cough Games Workshop. But, you know, these guys, two guys in like 2 years, just made a complete war game. They just rolled it out, was like, thaw, here you go.
Oh, I buy it.
Finished war game, it's sick,
I
too.
Believe it. Yeah.
It looks so sick. It's
you guys
based
could
around
do
like,
that.
Yeah, yeah, it's based around like these drop ships that fly around and drop like squads of tanks and hovercraft and crap and fighters. It's really cool.
Mm.
You should check it out on our website because it looks awesome.
What I really love about it is that, the models you, like you buy a tank squadron, and you buy the dropship for that tank squadron, you can actually like put the model tanks in the dropship in real life.
Yeah, they're made to the scale properly, so that you can actually put the ships, the tanks that are dropped by the dropships inside the dropship.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's attention to detail
on
there.
The table have the tanks that are inside it, actually inside it. You don't have to do that. It's an option. Like, if you care about how you model your shit, since you're spending that kind of money, you should probably care. I just thought that was ridiculous, because like, even for Games Workshop, like, a Land Raider compared to a Rhino, like, the size discrepancy is retarded.
Yeah, like, the in most games, the relative sizes of the different units are not exactly to scale in a lot of games.
Rhino is way too small to fit 10 speed.
Rhino, isn't that that's not that thing that that EA completely copied
no,
for their...
Well, I think they may have copied that one, but they copied another vehicle, too.
That's a battle wagon, which is also probably too small to fit 30 fucking orcs.
Yeah, no, it's definitely... You cannot fit 30 orcs inside a battle wagon under any circumstances. Even under, like, clown car packing them in, you cannot fit 30 orcs, which would be reasonable for orcs. The orcs, they could just hand wave it away and be like, they fit because they believe they fit.
Yeah,
that sounds about right. I mean, I don't know much about like the Warhammer universe, but from just playing the first 30 minutes of Space Marine on live, I could tell that those orcs are pretty fucked up.
Mm.
Yeah,
they just run around.
No, the entire orc species in 40K, they're like all latent psychics. They don't realize they have psychic abilities, psyker abilities.
They certainly don't act
the
like they're psychics.
No, right? they have psyker abilities. They're like ESP abilities. It's kind of like telekinesis stuff like that. But like the main property that they have collectively. Is they have their latent psyker abilities mean that stuff works because they believe it works. So most of the technology that orcs use doesn't actually work. It doesn't make sense, but it works because they believe it works.
Fuck.
Like, if they paint their vehicles red, they actually go faster because they believe that the red ones go faster. It's like a, like, it actually is, that's the in-universe explanation for how orc technology works.
That's actually kind of brilliant in a very stupid way.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I like how they run around sounding like Cockneys going, Spice Marine!
But that's what they're based on soccer hooligans.
You know what?
Awesome.
That was the original inspiration for the orcs in 40K. It's like chavs.
Oh,
that's actually the inspiration. That's why they talk that way.
It all makes sense.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's like the only good thing Games Workshop has ever done is the orc fluff.
All right, let's go from tabletop to video.
Video
games.
Video and arcade top 10.
You posted something.
God.
Yes, with Nicholas Pickles. Is that his real name? All right.
No, probably not.
I hope it's not his real name.
So, you posted something, Jay, about Steam on Linux. Did you want to talk about that?
Linux?
I call it Linux.
Who the fuck says Linux?
I do.
What's wrong
with
you?
Right here? Why?
Because I wrote it.
Like, okay,
the
lame jokes are bad enough. But this, in addition to the lame jokes, is just now evidence of bad character.
I've never heard anybody say it, therefore I called it Linux by default.
It's Linux.
Bad judgment calls.
All right, Linux.
I'm pretty sure it's Linux.
Okay, whatever.
It's fine. I actually know nothing about Linux. I tried using Linux for the first time probably about a year ago.
And how soon was it until you had to reformat your hard drive?
I had to reformat it 3 times before I got a working build of Linux on it. Where I think I was using like OpenSUSC, a build of that. So if anyone knows, yeah, I used OpenSUSC to install Linux on an old laptop. It runs perfectly. Like, if you're running old hardware and you just want to use it for browsing the web, put Linux on it.
And you don't mind reformatting your hard drive 3 times and... You know,
to get it
having,
right, yeah.
Having to have a second working computer to go online to get help with about 72 different things.
I honestly think it's a fair assumption that Lorenzo is a huge fan of Linux, and he just recommends it for everyone.
No,
exactly.
Look, it's one of those things. The underlying principles of the operating system are brilliant, but in execution, it is not for your average computer user,
it
basically.
It really isn't. Like, I tried using it. It is not... you don't want to give this to your sister and say, here, use this to browse the web, because she'll be like, how come Flash doesn't work? And you'll be like, okay, I now have to get Flash working on this fucking thing. And you gotta go to fucking packs and stuff, and it's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, it's sort of like the difference between an Apple TV and a Boxy, and the Boxy box.
Yeah,
the Apple TV is for, like, normal people.
Linux exists because it is an open platform that there's a huge community. Well, I wouldn't say huge.
No,
there's
a significant community. Linux is, it's essentially a free software variant, open development variant of Unix.
Right.
Based on the same principles as the Unix operating systems, okay? So, there's many, 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 many different versions of Linux that are being developed by different people, essentially, okay? Because it's an open development community. It's open source. It's like, I don't know, like...
Firefox.
Yeah. Similar type of development model, but much more diffuse community. So, like, it's really good. A lot of the Unix and Linux-based operating systems are really good. Even
Mac
OS, the OS X series, are all based on OpenBSD.
And the Android operating system that all the Google phones uses, that is also based off of Linux, essentially.
Yeah. So it's just that it takes a lot of resources to create a front end to a Linux operating system that makes it user-friendly for people who don't know how to use a command line interface.
Yeah.
Or aren't comfortable with a command line interface.
And there's actually a ton of, like, GUIs that you could put on top of Linux that work fantastically. The problem is getting stuff to work with your specific hardware, because, like, for the laptop I was using, no one bothered to make a driver for the ATI X200M, because no one gave a fuck to make a driver for that for Linux. ATI certainly wasn't going to make one, and no one else made one, so I was fucked in that sense. So that was a fucking nightmare trying to get it to work, but I eventually got that shit to work. But the thing right now that's happening is Steam is essentially being ported over to Linux, and it will be on Linux later, by the end of this year. And this is kind of a big deal for Linux, because this is pretty much like the first real push for gaming on Linux ever. I mean, it used to push a lot of clients for their, like, Quake games and the Quake engine onto Linux, because they wanted to, you know, support that community. But in recent years, after being bought by Bethesda, basically, they just said fuck you to them.
Right.
Like, Rage, there's no Linux client for Rage. And honestly, Rage barely fucking worked anyways, so I don't even know if that fucking game works. But now, pretty much Valve is porting Steam over to Linux, and they already have a pseudo-working version of Left 4 Dead 2 on it. And so what that means is that you have the source engine will be ported to Linux, which means once Left 4 Dead 2 is fully working, you'll get Left 4 Dead 1, you'll get Half-Life, Half-Life 2, you'll get all the source mod games, Team Fortress 2. It's kind of a big deal.
It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's really cool about Valve is I was reading an article, I was reading an article about Valve, and they're a software company with 300 employees and no managers. Their corporate structure is such that they have no managers and no bosses. Basically, they try to be really selective in who they hire and try and hire the best people. And then they basically say, go do whatever you want. And if other people are working on projects that interest you, you can go help them and join their project. And that's how they actually... So it's essentially an anarchist software development community that works on whatever the people, the programmers themselves, want to work on, so that they have no fixed project leaders. Instead, somebody will start developing a concept for a game, and other people will start getting involved, and by de facto, the person who started the concept becomes the project leader for that one project.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. So, like, their handbook, basically, the guy who owns the company, you remember his name,
Gabe Newell.
Right. He's like, nobody here is your boss, least of all me. It's like that's it, and they have, like, free massages and all kinds of, like, perks for their employees. But the other big thing that differentiates them from a lot of these other software companies is they give you all their employees all these perks, but they don't then expect them to work 100 hours a week. They actually expect them to work, like, 8 hours a day. That's it. Like, 8 hours, go home, see your family.
Mm-hmm.
But because they have this kind of, this lack of management structure, it's the software projects that get developed often take completely new approaches to developing solutions or new ideas. Like, the guy who started Valve, he didn't do this, like, on a whim. He wasn't like, I don't want a boss telling me what to do, so fuck that. Right? Some college kid who's like, bosses suck, let's not have any of those. The guy used to work in Microsoft, and he worked with, like, external clients a lot. And so he was in a lot of other businesses. And in addition to that, he worked at Microsoft, and he saw that a management-heavy development structure for software tended to institutionalize procedures, and so that there would end up being a lot of institutional inertia against new ideas. Mm-hmm. So things would end up just being like feature accumulations to existing bloated software instead of really original ideas or original solutions to problems. So when he started Valve, he was like, the way to avoid becoming a dinosaur is to just not let any of the structure exist. So it was like it was actually a reasoned choice. It wasn't like, you know, two guys in a garage who started a software company were like, bosses suck, so let's not have any.
Yeah.
You know?
There's two things about that that strike me. Number one is, like, I'm surprised that shit actually gets done, because it seems like it'll either work very well or it won't. And number two is that management is such an important part of business, and they, if they modeled themselves as, like, anti-Microsoft, or they appropriated, or that one guy appropriated things that he liked from different business models that he was exposed to at Microsoft, there's still some sort of underlying management, albeit progressive, right?
Well, there isn't. No.
I don't understand how...
Okay, but basically how it works is, if someone starts developing an idea for a project, for a software title, like a game, like, you know, they'll go around and start pitching other programmers there, like, I have this idea for a game, and if they can get enough other people that think the idea is awesome, those people will come help them. Mm-hmm. Like, all the desks at Valve have wheels on them, so people can move their desks.
I especially don't understand how things will get done, because I would just be, like, rolling on that desk all over the place.
Okay, but you have to understand, they try to hire people. These people want to make video games. They're not there because they just want to get paid to do nothing. They actually, because, you know, they want to create something. These people are, like, you know, to a certain extent, artists. Mm-hmm. They want to create video games. So it's like, nobody has to go and tell them, you have to go and make a video game or we're going to fire you, because that's what they want to do.
Yeah, right? It's one of those things where they will hire the right
so
people.
So if the people with good ideas get other programmers to gravitate to their ideas, so they end up forming impromptu teams that start working out the ideas. Once they have start something going, other people start flocking to the project, and so it's like it's organized socially in a sense.
Socialist gaming.
Yeah, it's crazy. Valve has done a lot of great stuff. Mm-hmm. So the model apparently has been really effective for them. A lot of people who study these types of things have been really baffled, because usually it's really hard to get an organization like this to work once it grows past 150 people. Because up to 150 people, it's possible to have personal relationships and know who everyone is. They say past that size, that doesn't really work anymore. So they're really baffled by getting something up, like upwards of 300 people to actually work this way. But they have said there are some issues with it. A lot of times, if they make a bad hiring decision, it's really hard to catch it and fire the person.
Yeah.
Right? Because you don't have that sort of organizational structure to catch them.
Yeah.
And because of the self-organizing way a lot of the software gets written, sometimes if somebody is just bad at what they're doing, coding a certain part of a game, other people won't catch on until way later. Mm-hmm. Apparently, that was a big problem with Half-Life 2, where there was like one software engineer who did a lot of really dumb things, and they didn't catch on for like 3 months. So, I mean, it has its pitfalls, but overall, it seems to have worked out really well for them. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of fascinating.
That's pretty cool. Gee, I know you tried to talk earlier. What is your take on this whole thing?
I don't know how you can have anybody be accountable to anything. I mean, if I was in that kind of environment, I'd do nothing.
Well, you're in an environment where you're supposed to be accountable, and you don't do anything now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And I have a boss. Imagine if I did have a boss.
Val would be bankrupt in 3 days.
Yeah. He'd just be, like, rolling down the hall on his desk.
But then there was someone would say that's a cool idea, and they would develop a game based on it, so he would still have a job. It'd be Desk Riders 2011.
That is already a video game. That's what I was trying to say.
That's true. It is?
You ride a chair or some shit, right?
Oh, that's that shitty PlayStation Move game, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I already got there, Jay. We're done.
That's true.
We have nothing to offer humanity.
I do want to bring up one other thing about the whole Valve thing, going back to the whole Valve Linux thing. Essentially, from what I've heard, and this is basically reading an extensive article that some guy on Phonox. I think it's called Phonox.net. They're like very big. It's a very big Linux community thing there, or at least a guy who's really pushing Linux. The reasoning behind this big push on Linux or the Linux platform that Valve is trying to do is because they think that Linux actually might be the future of gaming on the PC. Now, I know that sounds retarded. Does anyone else think that sounds retarded, or is it just me?
I totally understand where they're coming from, because all Linux-type operating systems generally have a much lower resource overhead compared to a Windows PC. So if you take the same PC and you put Windows 7 on it, or you put Linux on it, on the Linux version of that computer, you're going to have a lot more of the CPU and graphical resources available to the game instead of the operating system.
Yeah.
Is that because it's like stripped down or non-existent?
No, it's not necessarily. It's people who write a lot of stuff like Linux try to actually make software that's not bloated all to hell.
Yeah.
Okay?
They make it small on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, with the Windows series of operating systems, it got so bad when they reached the point of Vista that they had to rewrite from scratch for Windows 7. Because Vista had bloated to the point of being unworkable.
Yeah.
Completely.
And it shows with Windows 7, because Windows 7 is actually my favorite operating system of all the Windows. It's actually a good operating system for Windows. But yeah, this brings me back to another point. The reason why Gabe Newell, or apparently this guy on Phonox.net specifically stated that Gabe Newell was pushing the Linux platform because he has no faith in Windows 8 as an actual platform, like the next Windows coming out. And I don't know if you guys actually read up or have been following the development of Windows 8 at all.
Oh, yeah. No, I've heard some shit about this. Windows 8 is basically like trying to get rid of the desktop environment, isn't it?
What?
It is not trying to. Well, it is and it isn't. What it is doing, what Windows 8 is that they are pushing a tablet OS, but they're also somehow pushing it on the desktop. For some reason, I'm not sure why. It is one of those things where they're trying to make this whole unified system where, you have Windows Phone 8 or Windows Phone 7 with the Metro style, and you could also have that on your Xbox 360, have you guys used the new Xbox 360 dashboard recently?
No.
Like,
who the fuck uses an Xbox 360?
Dude,
it's an archaic dinosaur.
Well, it's just like you started to cut you. It's just like you said, though. Like, Apple comes up with a fucking idea, and now Windows.
But the major difference is,
yeah,
with Windows 8, what they're trying to do is basically take a tablet style interface like there is on, say, the iPad,
right,
and make that your desktop interface.
Yeah, but Apple is sort of implementing that via Lion, and now with Mountain Lion, they're taking what they explicitly say iPad features.
Yeah,
I've been using Lion for like a couple months now, and I really enjoy it. And I was weary because people said a lot of shit about it, like Mac users. But
well, Lion, there's a lot of things in Lion that are somewhat of an issue, like Windows file sharing or SMB file sharing on Lion is like crap.
See, I've never gone there, so
yeah. But
I guess
I would say, from what I heard, a lot of the bigger problems on Lion too was stuff like, okay, yeah, you want the gestures on the touchpad. They work fantastic on a touchpad. You have the natural scrolling, what they call it. But have that turn off when you plug in a fucking mouse. Don't make your mouse reversed too. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, that was a poor thing.
There.
But
yeah.
Essentially, getting back to the whole Gabe Newell, him having no faith in Windows 8 and Windows 8 itself, the reasoning behind that is because, yeah, Windows 8 is pushing Metro. Just like Xbox 360 has recently been pushing Metro. The Metro style is what the new Xbox 360 dashboard is. And it's fucking garbage.
I hate the new Xbox 360 dashboard.
Yeah, it's fucking garbage.
I love the one that was before it. I hate the new one. I can't fucking stand it.
Yeah, but like, as far as Metro goes, I've actually used it. I've used a little bit of the Windows 8 developer preview. The desktop is still there, But then when you hit the start button, instead of it opening up the file menu, it'll open up the Metro window, which essentially is the tablet OS. So what they're trying to do is like, okay, we're going to unify all the systems, and we're going to have the phone OS be similar to the tablet OS to be similar to the desktop OS. And the reasoning behind this is, and it's actually a pretty cool idea, and it's a good way for them, if Windows 8 is a success, to push Windows 8 on tablet and Windows 8 on the phones.
Right. Hold on a second. Let me make sure I understand this. So they're taking the phone interface, which everyone hates,
actually,
because
people,
you can't give away Windows 7 phones.
People actually, from what I've heard, a lot of people like Windows Phone 7. They just don't want to get invested because the ecosystem's shit.
Okay. So apparently it might be nice, but nobody wants to use it.
Yeah, because there's no applications for it. No one bothers making anything for it.
Right. So now they want to take this interface on a platform that nobody will touch with a 10-foot pole and ram it down all the desktop users' throats. Because if it was liked so much on phones, it's sure to be popular on desktops.
Yeah, that's the thing. What they're doing is they're banking on the idea that people actually do, like, when critics review the Windows Phone phones, they say it's a good phone, it's a great phone, but I'd rather use an iPhone because I have my apps, I have all my, you know, people have invested in that ecosystem.
And speaking of banking on ideas, let's talk about BlackBerry.
Well, actually, I want to explain basically the reason behind why they're pushing the Metro so much is because Windows 8, the whole idea behind it is that when you write an application for Windows 8, all you have to do is do a little bit of coding, and then that application will also work easily on Windows 8 on ARM, which is the tablet OS, and it'll also work on Windows 8 on the phone. So you could have... They're trying to get their big software install base, which they have on PC users, to get onto their tablet OS as well. They're trying to Trojan horse software onto their tablet.
So to speak.
Basically, yeah. But, like, well, I don't know. It sounds like a smart idea unless they really just piss off all their users and no one buys Windows 8. I mean, at this point...
Well, I mean, there is somewhat of a precedent for that with Microsoft.
That is true.
Well, I'm not going to lie. Based on what you just said, I'm not buying Windows 8. I'm done.
I'm not buying Windows 8 either because Windows 7 is fine for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Why would I love Windows 7.
But,
I mean...
But eventually you're going to have...
Every person in my family uses Windows operating system is still working on Windows XP because it's fine for them.
Or not.
Yeah, it's one of those things. But essentially what I think Windows 8 will excel at, and this is what I'm really interested in Windows 8 for, is that I think it actually is a fantastic tablet OS. Like, when using it on my PC, I could see how this would work fantastically on a tablet because it is actual multitasking in a good way on a tablet. Okay. And I've seen some pretty cool products, too, that people have been pushing on at CES specifically, where they had... It was like a MacBook Air-style laptop running Windows 8, and what happened was the tablet, you could use it as a laptop, and it's running Windows 8 as a laptop. And then when you flip, you could actually like flip, it's hard to describe this, but you could flip it entirely the opposite way, so it would be, I'm showing people what I mean, but no one else will see this. But
what he means is...
Your laptop will be like this,
no.
And then you'll push it like this,
right?
It'll magnetize, and then it'll switch to...
What he means is... You can basically rotate the screen on the laptop 180 degrees so it's facing away from the keyboard from the laptop, then fold it down on top of the keyboard so it's like a tablet.
Yeah, and then it becomes a tablet. It basically becomes a tablet. So
that's cool.
And that's one of those things, like the Transformer Prime is a very popular Android tablet. Not that Android tablets are popular, but it's a popular Android tablet because it has a keyboard and it's easily detachable and plug in. It's a cool docking station, but the tablet itself is kind of like bleh, kind of shit. Just like Android tablets in general.
Or his jokes.
Not my jokes.
Oh, just the jokes that he chooses. But yeah, speaking of things that are like bleh.
Yeah, let's talk about bleh.
Sorry.
Yeah, great. That's a great sound to put on the pod. What the fuck is wrong with you?
That's just what I think whenever
honestly,
I think of RIM anymore, because I used to be a very big supporter of RIM. I ran a BlackBerry.
The dagger
Berry
is sharp.
Oh, RIM. They suck
week.
So bad.
Yeah, BlackBerry 10 OS announced.
Just this morning, actually.
And the one thing they did, apparently, looking at the preview video, was take out the keyboard, which was the only redeeming feature the BlackBerry had.
Yeah, you guys remember when they made, what was it, the BlackBerry Thunderbolt?
Storm.
Or the Storm?
Oh,
it was
yeah.
that. It was. Yeah, okay, because no one actually remembers it. It was like the first BlackBerry that didn't have a keyboard, and it was shit. Well, it was shit because they don't know what the fuck they were doing when it came to making a touchscreen interface for their OS. So
I don't think anybody was really surprised by that at all, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think that BlackBerries in general were one of those things, and this happens a lot, where it serves the market for a time until something else comes out that innovates from it, but also is made by people who took their sweet ass time making it. And so you get into touchscreen technology and BlackBerry bites the dust. And then they try and get into it to save their asses, and it doesn't work.
Well, I mean, you gotta understand, the BlackBerry, for its time, was brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
No argument.
The ability to use email the way it introduced on a phone was great. The keyboard was great to type on.
And BBM.
BBM was both good and the devil, because I had G on BBM and he would never leave me the fuck alone.
You don't deserve privacy.
That's one of those funny things. Like, we're talking about how, like, at this point, their new OS, which is essentially looks, from what I've seen in the video, looks exactly like fucking either iOS or Android.
This is the point I was trying to make, right? Uh-huh. It's like, it was great for the time, but, like, iOS really kind of entirely rewrote the concept of what you could do on a phone.
Yeah.
The iOS interface is more like, it's more like a tablet interface than it is like a phone interface.
It's like,
right?
It's a computer. It's a mobile computer.
You know, the iPad was essentially like, they took a look at the iPhone and went, wait a minute. Yeah. We already have a working tablet. All we got to do is make this bigger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was such a quantum leap over what had gone before it that it rewrote the ground rules for what it took to compete. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the first time, like, I didn't want to get an iPhone when they first came out. And I never had a 3G iPhone of any kind, 3G, 3GS.
You're probably better for not getting that iPhone 1. It was kind of shit.
Yeah. But, you know, I had an iPod Touch at one point. I got one. I got one for free reward points and some bullshit, whatever. Anyway, because I wanted to put it in my car for music. And the first time I used this thing, it was like, holy... It was like my BlackBerry felt like a dinosaur.
Yeah.
It was like it immediately rendered a technological relic. And BlackBerry has never been able to recover.
Yeah.
They've never been able to look and go, okay, here's what we can do to turn our existing interface into something that will actually work.
Yeah.
You know? Because, I mean, realistically, getting rid of the keyboard is missing the point entirely. That's the part about the BlackBerry that people like.
Yeah.
They should have rewritten the interface to be able to, I don't know, browse the web effectively. You know what I mean?
BlackBerry's terrible at that.
Right.
And the screens are awkward, too.
Right. I mean, what you needed was to come up with a miniaturizing the technology enough that you could have a slide-out screen with a keyboard underneath.
Yeah.
So you could have the screen form factor of an iPhone, but with a full keyboard, and have an OS that would actually allow you to browse the web and use apps effectively.
Yeah.
And you would have had, like, a winner.
And they actually had at one point they had a design that sort of was similar to that, but the OS was... Basically, the problem at this point is that the BlackBerry OS is garbage. No one's writing anything for it. It's the same problem as Windows 7, or Windows Phone 7. The actual interface of Windows Phone 7, I've used them before. It's a fantastic interface. It's easy to use. You can see all... They got fun widgets and whatever the fuck, but no one does anything for it. No one's going to write the new fantastic app. You're not going to get Spotify or Pandora or even... what's the one freaking music streaming thing we have in Canada?
I don't know. I know you can use Last.fm from Canada.
Yeah, there's Last.fm. Yeah.
Which is really good, by the way. If anyone out there has not used Last.fm, that is a great way of finding new music to listen to. I highly recommend
it. I can't even remember the one that's in for Canada. But, like, in Windows Phone 7, they have the Zune Pass, which I actually think is the best music streaming service you could get. Because, well, maybe not anymore. Before, what they had was you pay $10 a month, you could stream anything that they have a license to, and three times a month you could pick a song, and you then have a license for that song forever. Which was a lot better deals than some other people were saying, where it's like you pay $10 a month and you get nothing.
I'm kind of the wrong person to talk about that stuff too, because like I buy CDs and rip them myself because I want to support the artist and I don't like trusting other people's encodes when downloading music.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Like even buying music and you download it and already encoded.
Yeah,
I'd rather have the actual CD to rip from source myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those things, like on iTunes before the quality was kind of shit. It's gotten better over time, but
Yeah, it's still. I don't think it's still. Well, they're at 192 right now.
256.
Oh, is it 256
now? Well, iTunes
now?
Match at least.
Okay, that's not bad.
But last summer, I converted my entire library to 320 and never turned back.
What, MP3s
or Leap? Yeah, MP3s.
I like AAC better.
Not to incriminate myself.
No, no, you're allowed to do that with music you own.
Yeah. Okay.
You're allowed to do that with CDs you own. That's what I actually buy the CDs because none of the bands I listen to are on major labels.
Right.
And I want to support the artist.
Yeah.
So I actually buy the CDs. I just. Who's going to carry around 300 CDs? I have like 315 CDs in my iTunes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like that's what I ripped them for. It's because there's no convenient way to actually bring my music with me otherwise.
Yeah. I actually want to get one of those iPod Classics with like the ridiculous amount of storage space just to put my entire music library on it. Because I have something like 90 gigs of music that I would like
what
to bring
the
with me.
Fuck.
What?
I have a lot of music.
The fuck do you listen to, man?
I listen to fucking everything.
90 gigs?
I listen
How
to
the
fucking
fuck
everything.
Do you have 90 gigs? I have 300 CDs and I'm at like 28 gigs.
I got started on music a long time ago and I just listen to all kinds of shit. You have no idea. I just
holy crap. You almost have as much music as I have porn. Like, that's bad.
Oh, I have much more than that.
No, I think you mean G. You don't mean you.
But I want to go back to the BlackBerry OS thing a little bit. Like they sort of had the form factor with the Torch, which I thought was a pretty cool design, but still poor software. What they're doing now with the BlackBerry 10 OS, which they sort of pushed when they showed this thing. It's like, okay, we have this thing that looks like an iPhone and a full touchscreen interface. If they decide for some reason that they're going to completely abandon the one thing that they actually had good when it came to design choices, which was that they had good keyboards on BlackBerries, only to go for at this point, a good touchscreen interface, that's not good enough. Because the problem that you had with your old interface was that no one wrote software for it, because no one gave a fuck about BlackBerry, because everyone was buying iPhones, everyone was buying Androids, and people were even buying Windows phones more than people were buying BlackBerries. So no one was building anything for it. Why are people going to take a chance just because now you made a full touchscreen interface to port it over? At this point, they need to either make sure that it's either incredibly easy to port software over to their OS, or they're fucked.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because no one's going to buy into that.
Actually, if you want my opinion for what I think RIM should do, is that they should stop making their own OS, start using the Google Android OS, and concentrate on making phones with really good keyboards and touchscreens. That's how they should save themselves, because there's a ready-made ecosystem for apps on the Google Android platform.
Exactly. And they sort of did that halfway with the BlackBerry, what's the playbook? Where it has Android emulation.
You know who likes the BlackBerry Playbook?
Mark Saltzman.
Fucking guy.
I actually kind of like the form factor of the BlackBerry Playbook. I think it's an okay tablet. It just pales in comparison to other tablets.
Which doesn't make it an okay tablet.
It does have an interesting aspect ratio. I'll give you that.
Okay, what were you going to say, G?
Mark Saltzman is brought up every podcast because he's an asshole.
you're just not a fan of Mark Saltzman. I get it.
Nobody is.
You can't track that guy is enough in a day. There's not enough time in a day.
Mm-hmm. You know what, though? I completely agree with Lorenzo on the whole thing where if they just adopt the Android OS with a good ecosystem, they could fucking kill, because the Android market is literally littered with shitty phones. If they could, especially phones that, you know, they use all this fucking garbage on top of it, like Samsung and TouchWiz, HTC Sense, Moto Blur, when at this point everyone who buys a freaking Android phone either will buy the Nexus or they're stupid and they buy something garbage like the Motorola Razr, which will never get the freaking ice cream sandwich update until the next freaking version of Android is on it. If they were smart, they should abandon their fucking OS because it's garbage.
Right.
I've used BlackBerry OS 8, I've used BlackBerry OS 9. They're garbage. It's not good. If they adopt Android, keep and make good hardware, and just use stock Android, which they can do, Google will be fucking happy about that, and other people will be fucking happy about that. They will sell phones because people like Android as an actual
platform.
And
people like the physical phones that RIM makes.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you combine physical phones with good software, and then if they don't add bloatware on top of that, then you'd have a winning combination. You would have what you'd have is you'd have phones that are better than the phones that Google designs themselves. Because the Google, with the Samsung Galaxy Nexus, it's a decent phone, but they went shitty on a camera, and the screen's pentile, which makes it look kind of like kind of garbage, in all honesty, even though it's a 720p screen. So it's just like, they have an opportunity that they could take, but they're too proud to just give up their OS. But their OS is garbage. I don't know, like, you'd say this to their business meeting, they would think you're crazy. But
let's, Jesus Christ.
It's a lion, get in the car.
All right, Avengers movie.
Hey, oh, that's finally coming out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I actually like how they've changed Nick Fury's persona in some of the comic books, like the Ultimate Universe for Marvel, into the what's the actor's name? I can't remember.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Into the Samuel L. Jackson persona.
You probably forgot because he never says motherfucker.
Exactly. But essentially, like, I love Samuel L. Jackson, and if they're gonna make Nick Fury more like Samuel L. Jackson, that is a good thing.
I suggest he tries beer.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah. I've never tried it. I have no idea what you're talking about. It's all good. It's fine. Okay.
It's a waste on you entirely.
Is that the Avengers talk right there?
I'm excited
that Joss Whedon is directing that fucking movie.
I didn't even know that until like 2 weeks ago.
Joss Whedon is directing
it? Joss Whedon directed the fucking Avengers movie. Isn't that crazy?
That movie is so good, it's ridiculous.
That's why I'll give it a chance, honestly.
I'm going to give it a chance because, like, Iron Man.
I think, okay, I gotta say,
a reason to show up.
Yeah, okay, I gotta be the guy who says it's fucked up that the Hulk has had like three different actors and they just popped in Mark Ruffalo, as much as I like him, to play the Hulk in the Avengers movie.
Yeah.
That's kind of fucked up. What happened?
But, like, nobody cares what his human persona looks like, so it doesn't matter.
The first Hulk movie, in my opinion, never happened. Doesn't exist because who cares? Eric Bana. But still, terrible fucking Ang Lee, no.
Let's fight hulked out poodles, guys.
The other guy, what's his face? Norton?
Edward Norton, I thought was pretty good. I love that movie.
Where did Mark Ruffalo come from?
I'll tell you where he came from. Edward Norton said, no, that's where he came from.
All right.
Yeah, that's basically the gist of it. But I mean,
the Hulk is certainly more defensible than Thor.
Yeah, I mean,
Jay and I still haven't seen Thor, but whatever.
I mean, not, whatever. I don't care one way or the other about the actor. It's not the actor's fault. It's that
no you superheroes can't
bring this
and then a god
character That's, to life.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, Thor's kind
There's
of
no way you can make Thor work live action. It's the most retarded thing in the history of existence. It's more retarded than Windows Vista. Like there is no, you just can't do it.
It's kind of fucked up, and his hammer is pretty sad.
Yeah, well, that's the entire reason why why Mike number two didn't sell the hammer's too small. Whatever, man.
Yeah,
he's such a size queen.
Exactly. No, but I don't know. I'm looking forward to this movie. I want to see it, but
I really don't think the movie has any chance of being a bad movie. I really don't at all.
At this point, it could be.
Oh, there's always a chance.
It could be one of those things where there's
don't
so much.
Yourself.
Like how many other movies of hype has this movie been brought up to? There's Iron Man 1, 2, the second Hulk movie, Captain America, the Thor movie.
There was a Captain America movie.
There was it was actually pretty good.
Wow, I totally missed that.
I didn't see it.
It's in the Captain America movie.
Yeah. But I can't help but think that they would have that instead of Thor, they would have some like other more, you know,
Green
well
Arrow's
known
there.
Green Arrow. No,
yeah.
that's Hawkeye. Hawkeye's in.
Oh, it's Hawkeye.
Yeah, they just put him in because they want another shield.
Who?
To Hawkeye.
Yeah,
who?
I thought it was Green Arrow. I thought Mark was like dancing in his fucking pants.
No, he was dancing in his pants because the WB is making a Green Arrow TV show. What were you gonna say, G?
I don't know. I don't know why Lorenzo's is walking away, but all right.
It's because we brought up Mark. It's too much. It's too much.
All right. Let's okay. So
there are other reasons Mark dances in his pants.
Okay. Yeah,
the Green Arrow isn't one of them.
I just want to make a quick point. Do you guys? This is a theory I have. I think they would have actually preferred to use Spider-Man over Thor if they actually had the license. If Marvel had the license to make a Spider-Man movie, but they don't because Sony still has it. Or maybe even like an X-Men character. I mean, I think the whole reason why you don't have characters like Scarlet Witch or Quicksilver, which are more well-known Avengers characters than they are X-Men characters in the movie, is because, I think, what is it, Sony Pictures owns the rights to the movie rights to every mutant in the Marvel Universe. Think about
Stan
that.
Stan fucking Lee, what did you do?
He made some bad decisions. But the first two X-Men movies were pretty decent. First Class wasn't bad.
First Class, I enjoyed.
The first two, I actually quite enjoyed the first two X-Men movies, particularly the second one.
Yeah.
There's
no number three. Never happened.
No. That's an atrocity.
Just like Spider-Man 3 never had.
Yeah, no,
that's never mind.
X-Men First disgusting. Class was a good film. I was surprised, actually.
Yeah, I've heard that. I just can't bring myself to watch
it. Check it out.
Because I had the misfortune of watching like X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh, God.
And as a result of that, no, sorry. No more X-Men movies of any kind. That franchise died as a film franchise.
I still can't believe that they got Ryan Reynolds to do Deadpool, which is a brilliant casting choice, if you ask me, and then they fucking sealed his mouth shut. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, they fucked it up.
What the fuck is wrong with you? That's the whole point of Deadpool.
You put the Merc with a mouth in your movie, and then you sew his mouth shut? What?
Deadpool's like the funniest character in the entire Marvel franchise.
On top of that, he's alive for how long? You know what I mean?
Like,
that isn't Deadpool. That movie never happens. That movie never occurred. Right? Okay, that's like a couple hours of my life I'm never going to get back.
But okay, in fairness, there's things about that movie that are fucked up. I'm a huge Wolverine fan, and having read the Origins comic book series and loved it, there are things in the Wolverine movie that they respected. Which I appreciate.
I never actually fully watched that movie because after like hearing the reviews and hearing what actually happens in the movie, I was just like, yeah, not watching that.
I'm just saying, in relation to the Origins comic series, which is great, that movie did abide by certain things.
So right. He was Canadian.
But they did such a bad job with everything else that it doesn't redeem it. So if you are interested, go read the comic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there was talk of there being an X-Men Origins Magneto, but that actually became First Class, and they sort of incorporate how Magneto came to be a little bit more in detail in that film, but it's not all about him. It's about other things too. It's about you know, the X-Men, the disagreement, the core disagreement between Magneto and Xavier.
I think they're both wrong personally.
Butting into the two different factions.
Yeah,
right?
But I think they're both idiots actually.
Yeah.
For elaborate.
Okay. Look.
Really? Oh, God.
We just brought the X-Men up.
Okay. Magneto, I think Magneto is right to say that
Magneto
mutants will never be accepted.
Yeah.
Okay? As they are. I think he's right, and that Xavier's, like, pacifist kind of play nice and beg for civil rights shtick is never going to work. You know why? Because nobody else got their civil rights by playing nice. Okay? This is a historical truism. On the other hand, Magneto's idea of, like, destroy the state is not the approach that's going to work either, because you can't.
Yeah.
Okay? I know you have mutants, and I know they're really powerful, but there's an entire fucking military.
Yeah.
Okay? That's not gonna work. You're just gonna piss everyone off. Violent revolutionary tactics in a modern setting are not gonna work.
Yeah.
So I think you need to be somewhere like someone, you know, if someone came along and was like, you know, maybe non-violent protest movements, you know, some sort of middle line between the like ridiculous idealism of Xavier and the like essentially quest for vengeance wrapped up in all sorts of justifications from Magneto.
Yeah.
You might have somebody who actually made sense, but the two of them, neither of them's right. They're both wrong. But I think that gives an interesting dynamic to the franchise, because like, you can't be like, you know, it's not like you can sit there and say, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys.
Yeah, I love that.
Exclusively. Because it's more complicated than that.
Yeah it's...
Because I don't think either of them is right.
You don't have black and white, you have different shades of gray.
Right.
Jay,
at least to a certain
black.
Extent.
Stop saying black, man.
No. Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, man.
Oh, you know what? Funnily enough, I saw one of the main guys in Black Eyed Peas on Top Gear.
Really?
Recently.
Why the hell were they on Top Gear?
He was like, he's a fan of cars.
Oh, okay.
He's apparently starting a car company.
There you go. And do something good with his money. He's supposed to make more shitty music.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to The Dark Knight Rises.
They made some okay music in the past.
Jay, you posted The Dark Knight Rises trailer on the site.
Yeah, the third trailer just came out. I can
loved
understand.
It.
You can understand what Bane says.
Gee, could you tell me what Bane says?
Something about Gotham and Retribution or some shit.
Yeah, I could actually understand it. It was amazing. Yeah. Like, I was like, whoa, they actually listened.
He's easier to understand now than than Batman is.
Yeah, jeez.
Oh my god, have you ever seen that YouTube video? him interrogating the Joker.
Yeah.
And he's like, the Joker's like, I can't understand what you're saying.
I really want to tell you, but I don't know what you're
I don't know what you're talking about there. I think they should have played that up, actually. If they played more into that, I think that would have been good.
But I really that guy's on so much steroids.
Sorry.
Yeah. But he is.
I honestly have...
Performance-enhancing drugs at work.
With Mike not here, this is the best time to be talking about this
I
shit.
Know. I want to talk about Batman so much, guys. Batman. Because
so much
if
Batman.
If we bring up Batman, it won't be like podcast number three where we bring up Batman and then we're talking about Batman for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
We can maybe talk about Batman for 20 minutes. Now, when he listens to this now, he'll be like, what the fuck, Jay?
Then we can talk about Sega Genesis.
Sega Genesis. Oh, I love Shining Force. It's a really good game. It is a good game.
The one,
not for everyone.
Good game.
There's also Phantasy Star. It was also good. Yeah. Pretty good. I got nothing else. Okay. I posted the trailer today, actually, and aside from that, there was also a little blurb that I wrote where I honestly sort of admitted to forgetting that this movie was even coming out because I've been looking forward to the Avengers.
I've been trying to forget because, I mean, honestly, there's way too many special effects and, like, ridiculous vehicles in the trailer that it kind of makes me go, this might have jumped the shark.
That's possible.
You know? I'm worried.
Yeah, that's true. At one point, he was like, this ain't a car, and he just flies away. It's like, what? What just happened?
Yeah, like
it was like a hover plane. That was the hover.
Yeah, and at that point, what I want to know is, what does Anne Hathaway do after that? Gee, I want to know what you would think. What would you write? If you were the writer of this movie, what would Anne Hathaway's next move be after Batman flies her away in the hover car?
I'm going to say DJs.
All right, that's what I thought you were going to say.
Hoverhead. It's
Hoverhead, yeah.
Oh, is that like Roadhead plus Mile High Club, or is he not high enough?
You're not Mile High. Well, maybe it counts for both.
Yeah, there you go.
It counts for both.
It's a double punch in the punch card. Oh, God.
All right.
No, but I don't know. I'm still looking forward to Dark Knight Rises. Yeah, I like how the kid from Popular Mechanics is in it. Popular Mechanics for Kids.
Which kid?
The guy who was also in Inception.
He wasn't in Popular Mechanics.
Wasn't he? I thought he was.
No. He was in Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, you're right. The kid from Third Rock from the Sun. Who was the kid from... There was some kid from Popular
Mechanics. Yeah, it was the guy who was in My Hometown.
The guy
if
from...
If you know that show...
If you know that show, go kill yourself because you're Canadian. No, it's fine. Don't kill yourself if you're Canadian. I'm Canadian. I'd have to kill myself, too.
Well, you should, but it's for other reasons.
Yes, because I watched every episode of My Hometown.
Oh, God.
No, I didn't. Oh my God, I remember coming home from school watching Spider-Man, and then the next thing that would show up would be like My Hometown. Like, who programmed this?
Yeah.
Who thinks that people who also watch Spider-Man want to watch My
Hometown? Why were there so many good cartoons in the 90s? Can somebody answer me this?
It's true.
Spider-Man, the new, like, the Batman, the animated series.
Batman and the animated series actually still legit holds up. Spider-Man and the X-Men cartoons, not as much.
Well, no, but I mean, like, compared to cartoons in the 80s. Like, listen, I watched a lot of cartoons in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
They were bad.
Yeah, they were pretty bad.
Like, Transformers was the only redeeming feature cartoons had in the 80s.
But some of the 80s cartoons are so bad they're good. Like, watching some of the things that happen in He-Man now, it's literally just hilarious.
Oh. G.I. Joe?
Oh, oh, God.
Oh, my God. My that entire, show is so bad.
My entire, like, drunken high school life was based off of getting drunk and watching those G.I. Joe redub things. Like, those G.I. Joe PSAs that some asshole on the internet made. Those things were fantastic. Pork chop fucking sandwiches. I don't fucking know. Like, I literally think everyone in the world has seen that. Like, that is the great equalizer. Everyone in the world has seen some guy say, pork chop sandwiches. Oh, shit. Get the fuck out. No, am I wrong? Like, seriously. Has
no,
anyone,
it's true.
Has anyone not
Who
seen that?
Who has not seen that, right?
Everyone in the world has seen that. Even, like, starving children in Africa with the flies on their face. They've seen that. Mark Saltzman drove.
Can we just cut Jay out of this?
No, just me and you. Just me and you. Yeah. And
Mark Saltzman drove to Africa, pulled out his BlackBerry playbook.
Oh my God.
And he was
man.
Like, hey, look, I can touch it. And then he showed them that video. And they were like,
they were like, fuck you, Mark Saltzman.
Yeah, and then,
just because.
And then the military lords who were hunting blood diamonds shot Mark Saltzman.
And then Leonardo DiCaprio was like, I was in a bad movie called Blood Diamonds.
Yeah,
it was a bad movie.
I'm just talking shit.
I honestly, like...
He's bad and he should feel bad.
I do,
Blood Diamond was a pretty good movie.
I do feel bad. Don't
Oh,
don't
okay. One more thing, talking about movie trailers.
One more thing.
I think I'm pronouncing this right. Django Unchained.
What is this, an Apple-like fucking feature presentation?
Quentin Tarantino's,
one more thing.
Quentin Tarantino's new film. I believe it's pronounced Django Unchained. It looks like good shit, and Leo's in it. That's what reminded me. But it looks
Leonardo awesome. DiCaprio's in a Tarantino movie?
Yeah.
He's dead.
Yeah.
Who thought this was going to happen?
I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was dead, like, in the early 2000s.
And he's got a Bob the Butcher. He's got a Bill the Butcher mustache. Like, you know Bill the Butcher, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got one of those get-ups. It's like a period piece. And
Tarantino makes interesting movies.
He does.
They're not necessarily good movies all the time, but they're always interesting.
Yes, and he's refined his filmmaking over time, like...
Hasn't he always killed himself in his own movies all the time or something?
He's not always in his own movies.
He does
no, but whenever he does a cameo, it's always like the most retarded character.
Just like Stan Lee, it's like, I'm a janitor.
Well, okay, this is a good segue because Tarantino was...
Stan looks like a janitor, come on.
What's that?
That's true, Stan Lee does look like a janitor.
They even made him a janitor in the new Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah, which, has anyone else seen that show?
I haven't seen it yet. Is it any good?
I've seen it. It is not what I expected from a Spider-Man cartoon. Has anyone here seen the Teen Titans cartoon that happened a while back?
Unfortunately.
I've heard of it.
It kind of reminds me of that, but better.
I've only seen
the style is similar. There's a lot of breaking the fourth wall. There's a lot of... it's actually more of... It reminds me more of Spider-Man and his amazing friends than an actual story based on just Spider-Man, because they have him teaming up with, like, the new warriors of the Ultimate Spider-Man universe. You got a Nova character, you got some character named White Tiger, and someone who's Iron Fist and Luke Cage. And they're all running around doing shit in high school. And fucking around, I don't know. Not literally fucking around. This show is literally like...
It would improve his mood.
Maybe. No, this show is literally like
hey,
a kid's show when it comes
it's
to Spider-Man.
So worth it.
Like, this is a kid's show version of Spider-Man. This is a kiddie Spider-Man show. Like... It's funny, we were mentioning like the 90s cartoons earlier, the 90s Spider-Man cartoon actually had a lot of like cool things happening. Like, you had characters who sort of, they didn't die, but they were like lost. Like, a little bit of a spoiler here if you watch the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, but I think like midway through, Mary Jane basically gets the equivalent of fucking killed. And then, there's a few other characters who basically get fucked, like Morbius gets fucked. There's a lot of like sad shit that happens in that show, and there's a lot of themes of like... There's depressing shit that happens, and it's not just like, hey, happy-go-lucky Spider-Man beat Doctor Doom kind of bullshit. But that show also moves at, like, watching it now, I'm thinking, like, was this show designed for kids with ADD? Because it moves at, like, 300 miles per hour. It doesn't stop. There's no, like, time to ponder a situation. It's just like, oh my god, Venom! I'm fighting Venom now! Oh my god, Mary Jane! Oh, Green Goblin!
Wow, could you please record that again? Amazing.
It's fantastic.
Intro.
All right.
No, that's not the intro.
Cool.
We got the intro.
So we were talking about... So Quentin Tarantino...
What were we talking about?
I completely derailed the conversation Spider-Man!
It's all good. It's all good.
Oh my god, I love Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin.
Oh yeah.
That was a fantastic... Awesome. That was fantastic
he
casting.
He was a amazing. Glorious large ham as that character.
No, it was a great casting choice. I just love Willem Dafoe.
But then James Franco...
Yeah. He was actually
anyway, Quentin Tarantino. Right.
Quentin Tarantino was interviewed. You can watch it on YouTube. He said that as soon as film, the medium film, becomes extinct, he's done making movies. And then he's going to write books about movies because he's like a historian and an enthusiast and stuff.
Well, so, that I already knew. That all right. He's a big enthusiast.
So this segues into digital filmmaking, 3D, and digital projection, and all these things. And I read a great article by this guy, David Bordwell, who's a well-known film theorist and historian.
A theorist.
By that read, pretentious douchebag.
Yes and no. Not to actually having, like, done this in school and, like, read his stuff, he's the least pretentious.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not.
I know. Just the way you read is like, you know, film critic and historian.
Yeah.
It's like, nobody can describe you like that and have you not sound like a raging dude.
He's actually one of the most down-to-earth writers, at least. So anyway, he's got a website, and he wrote an article. It was sort of targeted at James Cameron, but only because he's spearheading
this
whole...
There's another guy who should have had his typewriter taken away.
But it's because James Cameron is really spearheading the whole 3D push.
I still love how he basically wrote Pocahontas replaced certain words.
I know.
It was an okay movie though. But I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. Because
it's
true.
It was a beautiful movie. It wasn't a really good story.
Because that's actually part of it.
Yeah.
So David Bordwell, the gist of his article is that who made James Cameron king of the world? But I'm gonna set set it up a bit, okay?
So, he was like, "Here's your crown, your Majesty." And
no, he was like, "I'm the king of the world."
That's nice. Yeah, he did do that. That is when Leonardo.
I got there first.
You did?
Really?
Yeah.
You study film, and I got there first.
Titanic isn't exactly like a fucking deep movie. Anyway.
That's one of those things.
The problem is that it didn't get deep enough fast enough.
That's go watch it in 3D. Maybe it will, guys.
Guys, you should watch Titanic 2.
You should get Netflix and watch Titanic 2. It's amazing. It has nothing to do with anything whatsoever.
Movie. It's so bad.
Because it's okay, anyway.
Credit card.
So in 2005,
credit card.
Fuck that. In 2005, a handful of financially successful directors, namely George Lucas and James Cameron,
certain to be a good idea given who was involved.
Attended what's now called CinemaCon, which is an annual event held by the National Organization of Theater Owners, and they were on a mission to sell digital cinema. And at this time, there were fewer than 100 digital screens in the U.S. or theaters capable of that kind of projection. So Cameron and company told exhibitors that investing in digital projection would be good for business, mainly because 3D would attract new audiences and justify higher ticket prices. So the whole premise was that 3D wasn't feasible at home. Now fast forward to what's called NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, 2011. Cameron and his business partner Vincent Pace alerted TV people to the fact that their business was about to go 3D, and if they don't buy in, they'll be left in the dust. So there's a bit of a fucking contradiction there. The Cameron Pace Group, an interesting note, supplies 3D cameras and assistance to filmmakers and TV production companies, and they in fact provide for CBS Sports and ESPN.
Unsurprisingly, he has a financial interest in pushing.
Exactly, of course.
This is a case of James Cameron buying his cake and eating it.
Can I just interrupt you for 2 seconds
to
make 2 points?
Please.
First of all, I wonder, did anyone at that filmmaking CinemaCon?
Yeah.
Did anyone at that convention of theater owners turn around and ask him if he could start making some decent fucking movies? So, because the major reason that theaters can't get anyone to go to movies is because all the movies are shit or remakes of remakes of remakes of remakes. Yeah. No.
Well, no. Asked
him that question?
Now that you bring that up, it was him, Peter Jackson, Robert Zemeckis, and fucking Robert Rodriguez joined him at some point. And what they said was, you should buy into this and here's why. And also, we will either make new movies or re-release old ones, George Lucas, to exploit the 3D technology and make you money. That was part of their pitch.
No, the
some of them followed through, right?
The ticket prices thing was a big draw for the theaters to put in the 3D stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you know, the largest problem that movie theaters have had for quite a few years now is that, you know, I mean, go look at Rotten Tomatoes and find me another historical period where the average review for all the movies out in theaters simultaneously was as bad as it is right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, most movies end up below
in the 30%. Yeah. The average is like 30% across everything that's currently released.
Mm-hmm.
How do you expect to get people in theaters when everything's garbage?
Yeah, and there was this whole period where I thought, okay, there's been movies in Rotten Tomatoes where I saw that have gotten like ratings around like 50 where I still found some enjoyment in them. But then I watched Heartbreak Kid and I was like, oh God, I should have listened to Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Oh God.
The other thing is, bringing 3D to television, am I the only one who can't stand 3D television?
No, I can't stand it.
Because like, first of all, the glasses, it doesn't look good. And the other thing is, you wear those glasses for more than 2 minutes, you start to get a fucking headache.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You get pain. Like, it's not cool at all.
Yeah.
So, okay. So this year at NAB, Cameron's business partner said in an interview that the future of 3D will be defined by TV, which is like a complete fucking U-turn, okay? Furthermore, Cameron is now proposing that exhibitors fit their projectors with gear that permits higher frame rates in order to counteract dim images, a well-known problem with 3D. In other words, he's asking exhibitors to compensate for a deficiency in the 3D system that they bought into on his word. And I'm not saying that was a decision for them to make and Cameron didn't put a gun to their head, but at the same time, let's sum it up, okay? The bottom line is that Cameron not only wants to profoundly... Okay, i.e. King of the World. He not only wants to profoundly change film as we know it, because if you don't understand what deviating from 24 frames per second means, watch something that's not 24 frames per second.
It doesn't look right.
It looks either like home video if it's more frames.
Although HDTV gets away now, a lot of people are sort of used to 29.9997 because of HDTV.
That's a pretty, like, they want to push it to 48.
No, that's a completely, that'll look...
They want to double different. It. Just so 3D shit looks best in, mm-hmm. to their eyes, right? But exhibitors are sort of buying into this because they're kind of being bullied into upgrading at the whim of these financially successful directors. So it's a pretty fucked up situation, and I don't know if people truly understand what it means to implement all these changes.
What was that movie that we saw with Matt Damon? The guy who was like working with the FBI Informant?
Yeah, Informant. Yeah.
I don't know if I've said this before, but when I watched that movie with Steve and Mike, it looked like I had a window to Matt Damon, and that scares me. I don't want a window to Matt Damon. I don't want to look and see like, oh god, Matt Damon's there, because I will run.
We were at Mike's house, and we watched The Informant on his gorgeous Samsung television at 120 hertz.
120 frames per second.
It's not 120 frames per second,
it
but...
It is that true form thing that's sort of like...
Yeah, it produces sort of the effect of a higher frame rate inadvertently, which is one of my big gripes with television manufacturers, is that after people make creative decisions about frame rate and color and saturation and contrast, the manufacturers come along and say, fuck you, by default, we're going to ship these items out with everything jacked, and this is what people like because we say so. And some people don't know the difference, and some people actually calibrate their monitors.
No, I can't, That's right. If you have any sort of HD TV, you need to figure out how to calibrate that thing so it actually looks decent, because the default settings are crap on every TV.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny, that's why you
can't
have to fucking
looking
rise
at uncalibrated computer monitors either. Yeah. As soon as I see one, it fucking starts driving me nuts instantly.
Which is weird, because that's why you have the rise of the fucking Geek Squad, where they say, pay $30, we'll set this shit up for you. In that sense, like, it's funny how they provide services like, well, they will calibrate TVs for people who have no idea how to do that stuff. And it's funny how they also provide services, which is like the most useless thing in the world. Like, okay, we'll set up your Xbox 360 for you, which entails you plugging in two cords. But they'll do it for you for $30. God, how does
they calibrate computer monitors?
They will do anything you want for $30, but only one of those things.
No,
only one of those things.
Because if you get home calibration tools are okay, but like a proper calibration tool costs a lot of money. So the home user is not going to spend money.
There's usually guides and stuff. Like, I know on the internet for calibrating my...
For most TVs, there is. But for calibrating actual computer monitors...
I actually use my TV as a computer monitor.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't want to pay for a monitor. Those things are expensive.
Yeah, monitors are... computer monitors aren't expensive. What are you talking about? I got like a 20-inch computer monitor.
Well,
Samsung LCD $100.
What I want to buy is I want to buy a 30-inch monitor that does like the 2500 resolution at like 120 hertz.
Okay.
Something like that will run me something like $1,000. So it's just like, okay, I have this TV good enough.
Yeah. Well, wait a couple of years and it'll be dirt cheap.
The photo monitors... Those
I freaking love those.
Expensive.
I was actually recently looking at one of those.
I have dual display, so I don't care. I use two monitors.
Yeah. No, it's like the NEC monitors. Those things are fucking expensive.
That's something
I'm
eventually going to set up. I'm going to have my TV set up as the second monitor and a desktop monitor for me playing computer games and stuff, because I actually like using my PC as a Netflix client, because it doesn't block any... I don't have to deal with any shitty interfaces. I could just use like a wireless touchpad that I have from HP. And I could use things that are blocked out normally from web clients. Like, I could use ctv.ca and watch anything on CTV if that was in America, I could just use Hulu without paying the $8 a month to get it on a fucking device. I could use HBO Go if I had HBO, but I'm not gonna pay extra money for HBO.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. So you guys wanted to talk about Game of Thrones, but
no,
you don't, because I'm a complete virgin, and
it's been running. I think we don't have time to do it this week.
Yeah, okay. And
we'll talk about it next week when Mike's back and G's actually physically present.
Okay, we're gonna wrap it up. This has been podcast number 23. That's Your Garbage. Visit us at thatsyourgarbage.com. Email us podcast@thatsyourgarbage.com. Please send us jokes, or I'm gonna keep putting out fucking terrible ones. Join us next week.
That's everybody. That's a threat. Right.
Join us next week. I think everybody will be here, and we'll talk a lot of shit. And Lorenzo's going to sharpen his dagger, and we'll have a good time. Okay, signing out. Talk soon. Bye.